So at this time, we have the opportunity to sit in meditation, to listen to the Dhamma. Attending well to the Dhamma gives rise to wisdom. And this is a way of practice, a method of practice that is important. So we listen to the Dhamma. It's able to help reduce our defilements, help us develop in the Dhamma path. Like listening to the Dhamma of Lumpu Cha many times. And we see that doing this, the mind improves and develops according to its level. And Venerable Ajahn Chah, he would know where his disciples were stuck, what they were doubting about. And the teachings would also give strength and energy to one's mindfulness and wisdom. So this is able to help our minds. So sometimes we have a lot of defilement. We've read a lot of teachings. And people would come to question Venerable Ajahn Chah about material form, feeling, perceptions, formation, sense consciousness, and so on. And sometimes Venerable Ajahn Chah would answer with quiet. And then the student would know that they needed to go contemplate his teachings. Because sometimes it's our defilements that bring us to ask about various issues. Sometimes we sit and listen to the meditation talk from Venerable Ajahn Chah, but we still want to ask our question. So the defilements can be like this. And sometimes one may wonder, why does the disciple have so little wisdom? Why is the wisdom so low? Like Venerable Sariputta listened to the Dhamma and didn't ask any questions, and he realized arahantship. So why is our wisdom so little? Sometimes Venerable Ajahn Chah would answer the question already, but the disciple would still ask anyway. So in the beginning, it can be like this. So we listen to Dhamma to bring the mind to not doubting anymore. And sometimes practicing as a lay person, we practice the Dhamma, put down our duties and work and so on to come to the monastery to practice for this 9-day period, for instance. And then we return home, and then we have our duties there, like family, work, and so on, things that we must do, taking care of our livelihood. And we do this to the best of our ability to fulfill our duties. But we need to change the feeling in our minds. So practicing the Dhamma at the monastery, then we go to practice at home. We need to have effort and perseverance. Sometimes the spouses, the husband and wife, spouses can practice together, meditating together, training the mind together, chanting together, sitting meditation together, doing acts of merit together, helping each other out. Like for instance, in the morning or in the evening before bed, can be an opportunity to chant, sit meditation before sleep, for instance, to bring the mind to joyfulness and brightness, to change the mind state. So we can see that being at home, it can be like a type of viveka, a type of solitude. So we can make a shrine room, a room of practice, chant, meditate. We train our minds like this to have peacefulness and collectedness, to have samadhi. Because we're not at the monastery all the time, we have different duties. We need to have loving kindness for our children, for our spouse. And so we see that this can be a blessing in our life to do our duties well. One is a giver, one who gives without any hope of getting anything in return. And the child, having understood this, the child can then help the mother and father. and can give back with loving kindness and compassion, and pay back the debt of gratitude. This is something that's hard to find in the world, one who returns the debt of gratitude or pays back the debt of gratitude. So this is one way to build parami, build spiritual virtue. So the child grows up, finishes their studies, does their work, and perhaps they come help the parents when the parents are sick. But we don't wish for this, we don't hope for this. We just give without any hope of getting anything back. Give with loving kindness. And then it'll come back on its own. So we do our duties. We see that living in the world, some people have a great deal of defilement, a great deal of kilesa, lack virtue. It's like they're still in the mud. And we can make the simile that we are like lotuses that have arisen out of the mud already, but we still have to interact with those that are still in the mud. So the world is like this. Because having kilesa, having defilement, one is born into the world, and then one meets with those who have thick defilement and coarse wisdom. And then the mind meets with suffering, stress, and dukkha. So this is normal. So therefore we have to have certain inner qualities, like patient endurance, perseverance, willing to endure, have patience. We need to have this. We need to have patient endurance, to have restraint, not to express the anger or aversion outwardly, but to have sincerity in our duties and our work. So sometimes we do our work, and sometimes we do our work correctly. Sometimes we do our work incorrectly, and sometimes we get reprimanded by our boss, and this is normal. So we have to think, if we're the boss and our employee does something wrong, then we have to behave in this way also. We have to reprimand and correct it in order to make the work successful, to make the work go well and succeed, so that the results of the work are the best that they can be. Because we endeavor to gain wealth, in doing this, our body and mind must become tired sometimes. So we have patient endurance, we have effort, we make our mind strong. So we have sacrifice on the inner and outer level. So our mind sacrifices its dislikes and aversions. On the outer level, we make effort to smile, to do goodness and merit, to have effort and striving in our work, and to meet with success, to let go of anger, not to have anger towards our boss, because the boss is one who teaches us and helps us to show us the way to gaining wealth. Because doing this work, it's necessary to have wealth to care for oneself, to care for one's family. So we need to have patient endurance, to have these qualities of humility and beautiful conduct. These are qualities that lay people need to have control over the mind and to see according to the truth. Because this knowing and understanding of the Dhamma, it's not just for monastics. We have these duties, these responsibilities, and we do them to the best of our ability. We also practice to make our mind joyful, to have loving kindness and compassion, to set our hearts firmly on this. When we wake up in the morning each day, we determine our hearts that, may I not fall into anger today. If I do fall into anger, may I give forgiveness. May I not respond to anger with anger. So we can think back to the past life of our Buddha. He was born as a Naga, a serpent-like being, and he was being tortured greatly to the point where he was close to death. But he didn't let himself fall into anger. He didn't respond with anger, but he was perfecting his parami of virtue, a sila parami. So having read this story already, then we endeavor to follow this example, to do the same in order to be a child of the Buddha. And it's possible for lay people to be children of the Buddha. So we train our minds to be joyful and bright, to make our minds clear, radiant. Because it's normal for the mind to have greed, aversion, and delusion. So we have love, and then we have clinging, have attachment, have worry, clinging to material objects, clinging to wealth, clinging to others. So we have this sense of self, like my husband, my wife, my spouse, my children. So there's clinging there, and that's normal. So this is natural for the mind to be like this. So we have knowing to know what is the mind like. We have mindfulness with that. So if something's arisen in the mind already, got unwholesome or bad mood, we have effort to abandon that. Because for ourselves, we have a goal in our lives. We want this coolness and happiness. We want letting go to realize Nibbana. And we ask ourselves, well, where is Nibbana? It's right here in the mind. It's not far away, it's not anywhere else. It's right here in the mind. So we have this goal of letting go. So if greed arises, we practice to let it go, to abandon it. If greed arises, aversion arises, delusion arises, we practice to let it go. If clinging arises, we practice to let it go. We contemplate that it's unsure, it's not permanent, it's changing. We contemplate as well that if we cling like this, then we can't go to Nibbana, we can't see the Dhamma. Because we want the Dhamma, we want to see the Dhamma, we want to let go, to feel happiness and ease in our minds. And sometimes the mind is not able to achieve victory over these mind states. The mind lacks energy and strength. These mind states and moods are causing proliferation in our minds. So we teach our minds right then and there. So we recollect what Venerable Ajahn Chah taught, that we know the mind state as simply a mind state. We teach the mind right there. We see that the mind is a mind object. The mind is the mind. They're two different things. It's like oil and water. They're separate. They don't mix together. So that one trains that the mind and mind states and mind objects don't mix together. But if the mind has clinging, then they mix together. So we train the mind. We train the mind to be good. We practice sila samadhipanya, virtue, collectedness and wisdom, generosity, virtue and meditation, dana sila bhavana. We train in our meditation object, our kamatana. So we see the mind that's in the present moment, what is that like? And then we come into society, meet with society, have these mind states of liking and disliking. So we practice to train ourselves well in daily life every day. So one may have a spouse, a husband or a wife, or care for their children. So you do all those things with mindfulness and wisdom. So you seek a way to cure the suffering in the mind. So sometimes one's children do something wrong, and it's the duty of the mother and father to teach the child what is correct and what is right. Because the mother and father wish for the best for their children. then the children follow the example of the mother and father. And this is a child who's behaving in the best way. Then we have this opportunity to care for our minds. So we have a goal in our practice. We have a goal with regard to our learning, our studying. We have a goal when we want to achieve success in learning a particular subject or field. And then when the child is able to meet with success to a certain degree, then the duty or burden on the mother and father becomes lighter, their minds feel lighter, then they have more time to meditate. But before this happens, and it's an opportunity to build parami, to build spiritual virtues, because we see that the mother and father are the arahant, the fully awakened being for their children. They are the Brahma God of their children. They are the first teacher of their children. So they do these duties to their fullest. And we see that monastics also have a mother and father as well. The mother and father cared for them and gave them, raised them so that they could have the opportunity to come ordain. So if one's child has a parami as well, it's not sure. They may also come to ordain to extend the lifespan of the dispensation of the Buddha. So we see sometimes the mind has suffering, has some kind of disliking in the present moment, wishing for this or that. This is tanha, craving, the defilement of craving. So sometimes we're doing our work in the world, we feel that we don't like our present self or our present situation. This is vibhava tanha, a craving not to have, not to be. So having this craving already, this suffering already, so we train our minds to think, to make our thoughts correct and right, to teach the mind to have mindfulness, to have a good quality of mindfulness, a good quality of sampajanya, clear awareness, to give the mind strength and energy, to make the mind have the ability to contemplate. So we can compare it to having some kind of heavy object, a heavy thing. If we have the strength, then we can lift it. If we don't have the strength, then we can't lift it, and we think that it's heavy. But we don't see that we're just lacking the strength. So we need to build up our strength. So we have this strength of faith, strength of effort. We train the mind to have samadhi to a good degree, to have wisdom. So this faith is one strength that leads the way. And we cultivate mindfulness and samadhi, recollections, firm peacefulness of mind, as much as we're able to. As we see in our daily life, we need emptiness. We don't want clinging. And when it's like this, then Nibbana can arise in the mind. So we teach our minds every day like this. So if anger arises, we teach the mind that we don't want that. Letting go is better, because anger makes the mind sullied and low. So we practice to be able to let go of this mind state, to see that the mind state is just a mind state. It's impermanent, stressful, and not self. It's not a me, not a mine, a you or yours. So we train and practice like this. We train like this every day. It's hard to do in the beginning. We have anger, have various mind states arise. But then samadhi arises one day. Then we can see the anger simply arise and then cease. It happens right in front of us. We see its true nature. So therefore, may you train the mind in this firm peacefulness, this samadhi, and do this to its completeness, to make it complete in your meditation. And if you have children, you care for your children, and you can contemplate that we were once children as well. So our mother and father took care of us, we grew up. And as we grow up, we reach the point where our mother and father pass away, and we can think, well, where did they go? So now that we're an adult, our mother and father are gone, and someday we will also be gone. We will die from this world, and then our children will be just like us. They will be in a situation where they're the adult, but the mother and father have passed away. So we contemplate. So our mind may feel loneliness sometimes. So we think that life is unsure. Mother and father are gone. We will also die, that all life must end in death. So we bring the mind to samadhi, to this firm peacefulness. So we know that having been born into this world, that we have to meet with all these various waves of the world. It's various waves, just like the ocean. So we care for our children. And we meet with many things in our lives. Sometimes we have work that can be very chaotic, give rise to agitation, very busy, can have a lot of stress, a lot of suffering and stress. And so everyone experiences this at some point. So we may have fear and worry arise. Will I lose my job? Will I lose my livelihood? Will I have enough money? So people can have such worry and fear to the point where they can't sleep. So this here is dukkha, this is suffering. So we see the noble truth of suffering. So having been born, we see that it's like this. We study, finish our studies, go to work. We have suffering like this. We have these duties. And we make a plan of how to live our life, how to get a livelihood, how to acquire wealth, and having a family, how to take care of one's family, and how to overcome various obstacles in life, various dangers in life, like danger from loss or thieves and so on, to overcome those dangers with mindfulness and wisdom. We see that the Buddha taught about this already, had a past life like this. We see that the Buddha, when in the past when he was a lay person, he would practice generosity, virtue and meditation all the time. It's not that he was a monastic in every single life. See that whether one's a monastic or a layperson, one needs mindfulness and wisdom. So on one occasion in a past life, the Buddha met with an amount of gold in his farmer's field, and he used a lot of care with regard to the use of that gold. Because he knew that if people found out about it, then people would come to steal it. So he made sure that no one knew that he had acquired all this gold. So he found the gold in the field, and he would just use it bit by bit, use it a little bit at a time. So not even his wife or child knew that he had it, because he saw if they knew about it, then other people might find out about it, and this would be dangerous for them. So he used mindfulness and wisdom to use that wealth well, to use it for benefit. So for ourselves as well, we need to use mindfulness and wisdom to make our lives firm and stable like this, to take care of ourselves, our family. So we set our hearts on practicing like this. So we contemplate daily, contemplate impermanence, see that having been born, one's a child, one grows up, and then one dies. If one doesn't practice, then one dies a meaningless death. Because we see that life, when we're alive, we have the breath. But when one's still breathing, one can be dead already. This is being dead while one's still breathing, because one doesn't have mindfulness. And then this is a life where one dies without meaning, without value. So therefore we need to build goodness, build merit of all types. So we do chanting, we meditate, recite Bhutto. If we're angry, then we recite Bhutto, 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 to the point where we can let go of that anger. Because we recollect that if we're angry, we recite Bhutto. Bhutto is the one who knows, the joyful one, the awakened one. Recollecting this, then the mind stops clinging, can see it as not self. Always we recollect, well, there's no one, the person, or there's no one there who made us angry, and who is the one who's angry? Material form is empty, isn't it? I am empty, isn't that right? Is it really self? Is it really me and mine? So we recollect Bhutto, and we see the anger disappear, dissipate. So we have wisdom according to these different levels. In the end, this feeling of fullness, completeness arises. So it is possible for lay people to see the Dhamma, know the Dhamma. One goes from a Kalyanachana, one with a beautiful mind, to one with the superior or best mind, the noble being, Aryachana. One who's far from the enemies of greed, aversion, and delusion. We see the body as not self, not me or mine. So seeing not self, and we see the self. Seeing anatta, this is seeing the true self. This is what Venerable Ajahn Chah taught. So we see not self, and this is seeing the self. This is seeing impermanence, stress, and not self. If we see the self as self, then this is defilement. So therefore we endeavor, we keep fighting on the practice every day. So this is what you can take with you. So this is what I'm giving you, is these Dhamma teachings that you can take home. There's no other gift that I'm giving you. So may you take this essence of Dhamma back home to use and contemplate, to see materiality and mentality as impermanent, stressful, and not self like this, to see that everything disappears, degrades, dissipates. So may you have patient endurance. May you endeavor, have effort. May you practice and train your mind. So the mind, you cultivate loving kindness, compassion, sacrifice. Don't think that your family is a burden, but have loving kindness. In this way you can have peace and happiness in your life, in your home. You have the five precepts, sometimes eight precepts. So you practice like this. So may you all develop and grow in Dhamma.
Karang goromase satu 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 anumotami.